You know, in this position, I am really blessed that I get a chance to visit with a whole lot of different people connected to Wisconsin agriculture in different ways. Some of those folks make an immediate impression on you. Other folks make a lasting impression on you. My guest today has done both for me. His name is Jerry Apps. He has not only been a dairy farmer, county extension agent, an ag professor, he also has a PhD in education and rural sociology from UW-Madison. By the way, did I mention that he's a best-selling author as well? That's why I'm chatting with him today. His latest release is called On Farms and Rural Communities, an Agriculture Ethic for the Future. A little change up on direction as far as Apps works are concerned. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, Jerry, so good to see you. Thank you for taking the time. Let's get folks up to speed on how you're doing.
I'm getting on in the years, as they say, long in the tooth. So I am not. To put it right out there, I'm not doing any face-to-face presentations. But that doesn't mean I'm not busy. I'm writing 2 to 3, probably 4 hours a day. I try to anyway. And I'm doing books. I'm still doing television. I do a fair amount of radio. And I'm having a whale of a good time, tell you the truth. It's the same thing that I've been doing. Can you believe it? For 60 years now, for 30 years, the last 30 years, I've been doing it full time. The previous 30 years, I was doing it part time. And it all started in 1966 when I began writing a weekly column for the grand salary of $5. That was the beginning of my professional writing career.
You know, one thing I haven't stopped to think about for a while is how you break your projects up by category, kind of.
Yeah, let's first start with the broad category that I decided to work on. And let me back up and give you a little story about that, because when I graduated from the university back in UW-Madison in 1955, I was required to go into the Army. At that time, I thought I was going to be a city person. I thought everything that I knew about farming was something to be forgotten and left behind. And so now I'm in Fort Eustis, Virginia, second lieutenant. The Korean War was over. This is 1955. And I'm meeting with my other officers, and we're talking about our growing up years. And they're telling me, like, what was like in Boston. Well, I don't much care about Boston, or Philadelphia, or New York. And so then I began sharing some of my farm stories, and their eyes got wide. You mean you grew up without electricity? How could you possibly grow up without? Well, then I began explaining all of that. Well, the result of that experience, I came away from the Army with the idea that, you know, I've got something special in my background, as do other people who grew up on farms. And I decided that I was going to spend my life trying to help rural people, trying to help those who had experiences similar to mine, because I grew up during the Depression, where we absolutely had nothing. My gosh, you wondered if you had something to eat, if you had a roof over your head. You were fortunate, and as it turned out, we had not much more than that. So all of that led me to deciding I'm going to try and help farmers. I had polio in 1947. And I couldn't walk for a long time. My right leg was paralyzed. And I'm in high school. And my high school class was one of, well, you better play baseball or you're not accepted as a student. Well, I couldn't. So one of my teachers, Paul Wright, he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, because I was a miserable kid at that time, feeling worthless, couldn't do anything. Could hardly do a work on the farm. He said, you should take typewriting. Mm. I said, typewriting? Why in God's creation would I take typewriting? Well, he said, you just might enjoy it. So I'm now in a typewriting class, and I'm discovering, by golly, I kind of like this. I was milking cows by hand, and I had strong fingers. I could make the A work. I could make the semicolon work, although at that time nobody knew what to do with the semicolon anyway. So that typewriting experience, that typewriting class, was also the newspaper office for the Wild Rose High School. Uh-huh. And our newspaper had the glorious name of The Rosebud. And so now I'm a reporter for The Rosebud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm talking to the kids about their love affairs and all, all this kind of. And I was never censored. I should have been. Yeah. I never was censored. And pretty soon I'm the assistant editor. And then I'm the editor of The Rosebud. I mean, I'm writing editorials on anything and everything and never got censored. That's how I got started writing. So I put those two ideas together. How can I be of some help to farmers? And how can I, and what are the ways by which I can do that? Well, one way to do it was to become a county extension agent.
Yep.
And so I did that for 5 years. And then I had no intention whatever of becoming a professor, but then one day I'm a professor of agriculture, where I did that for 30 years. So all of that is in tune with my goal of helping rural people through writing, through my teaching, through workshops, through radio, through television. I love the media. When I worked as a county extension agent, in Green Bay especially, when I worked with Orion Samuelson, I learned about radio. I learned about television at the beginning. Whenever what you said, by golly, that's what went on the air. There wasn't any editing or correcting. And I've never forgotten that. Orion and I have remained good friends. He's about the same age as I am. Over the years, he's helped me in several ways with some of my books. So that's a little bit about how I put it all together.
Now, this new project is a little bit different than what I've seen from Jerry Apps. And that goes back to the story you just told. Having respect for your past while you're trying to form a future. In this regard, you're talking a little bit about policy.
Yes, I certainly am. And my new book is called On Farms and Rural Communities. And in that book, I do three things. I talk about the history, briefly, of agriculture. It's important, as I've pointed out so many times, that we pay attention to where we've been, that we pay attention to our histories. But then I talk about where we are now and what farms look like today and what's the plight of the family farmer. And what's going on with rural villages? My gosh, the rural village at one time and the farms were together. They helped each other. They depended on each other. And all of a sudden, all of that began coming apart, especially in the 1960s and 70s. That became coming apart. So then once I get looking at where we are now, I'm at a stage in my life where I said, what can we do about it? Well, I'm just going to sit here and watch all this go apart. I've been trying to help farmers now for all of these many years, and I'm supposed to sit here and see it all come apart? Right. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So the latter part of the book is about what are the questions we need to raise, and who needs to raise them about where we are going. And I'm especially excited about focusing on the family farm, because I grew up on one. Maybe I'm prejudiced, but I still think there are values and beliefs that come out of the valley of out of the family farm, in addition to the food and fiber that's produced, that are valuable and that we ought to reconsider as we look ahead. Everything is not money, people. Everything is not earning more money. Economics are important. But let us not forget what the Native Americans said. And I have this in this book in large type, but it means that. The Native Americans, and I've studied a lot of Native American material lately, they said things like, the land is our mother. And what we do to the land today, we ought to think about what that means 7 generations from now. And I've become committed to that. How can we, with a family farm, and I talk about in depth about that in this book, how can we create policy that allows the family farm to do what I've just said, to offer these values and beliefs that are, I think, extremely valuable for our society to continue, as well as taking care of the land, because, as some wag once said, they aren't making any more of it.
You know, that there's a lot of us that obviously grew up in the same scenarios as you did, Jerry. What I'm curious about is, how is your book going to bring the other side of that conversation in? People that have zero knowledge about production agriculture, rural life, zero interest. How are you forging those conversations?
That's a challenge, and I'm trying to face it head on. I'm a storyteller. I don't care if you live in a city or if you live in the country. I have yet to find a person that doesn't like a good story. So I tell stories, and I tell them in such a way that you may be entertained at one level, but my hope is that I will grab you emotionally to the point where you'll say, you know, I ought to do something more about this. I ought to read about this. I ought to go to a workshop about this. I ought to talk to somebody else about this. I ought to join an organization that is interested in this, because our society is not going to make it unless we together face issues like the future of agriculture and its us and its rural communities. Our future depends on our paying attention to that, and it's everybody's job to do it. And rather than knock them over the head, as I just said, I tell a story, and they look at me like, whoa, what's going on with this guy? I thought he was talking about policy. Aha, I got you now.
We're putting together a farm bill that's already been postponed. We're in an election year where it seems like nobody wants to listen to anybody else's opinions on things. That's one of your problems. One of the issues you cite is listening actively, regardless of what the opinion is.
Yes, and learning how to listen and sort, not just accept, but examine. Examine the source of the material that you are listening to. Because of the electronic world we're in now, because of all of the computers and all of the websites and all that stuff, it comes at us like a snowstorm in winter. And we don't know what to do. We're overwhelmed with it. Well, so let's sort it out. And let's learn how to, as I said earlier, to think for ourselves, because that's the key to good policy making. Each of us is an informed citizen, not just a voting citizen. A voting citizen who is not informed, it's not a great help to us.
Well, and that's just the thing, is it comes at us so fast. How do you help people think through thinking for themselves? Some have never been accosted by that idea, Jerry.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm trying to figure that out myself right now. But I try through a variety of ways. I taught that for 30 years at the university in my courses, how to do critical and creative thinking. And I try to, and I taught creative writing courses, yeah. Workshops too, where I taught that stuff. But I try to make it exciting. I try to make it interesting. I try to suggest that it's a kind of a fun detective task to decide, is this person telling the truth, or is this another whopper that's coming down the line because he or she heard somebody else share it or heard somebody else share it? We've got a lot of that going around. So let's stop and think, oh my gosh, if we would only recognize the power of thought. Not just any old thought, but critical thought and creative thought. That's what's necessary, and I'm trying my darndest to help you do that. People say, I don't have any creativity at all. I don't know what that means. Oh, I would say, you've got more creativity than you think you have. Let me help you with that.
Jerry Apps is along with us. His new book on farms and rural communities. It's a little bit of a change-up if you're an Apps fan. He, as he told me when I first walked in, he's of the age where he really doesn't care if people are upset with his opinions on certain things. But the other thing, Jerry, is you and I both grew up as rural country kids. The grocery store, the church, maybe that one bar in town, that is the fiber of why we're doing what we're doing. Can we recreate that? Or when you fast forward to what you think the next generation or the next decade is going to look like. Tell me what you see.
We cannot recreate it. One of the interesting dilemmas that the historian has who is talking about the future is that history is something to look at and to examine. And then here's what I suggest. What of that history should we bring forward, and what of it should we leave behind? And that's what critical thinking, the essence of critical thinking, is about. Don't misunderstand me when I talk about the values and beliefs that come out of the family farm of the 30s and 40s and 50s. Many of them are worthy of coming forward. Not all of them. There was a lot of racism in those beliefs. Those need to be left behind. There were some beliefs about farming that need to be left behind. And that's where the thinking part comes in. We need to sort it out. So anyway, it's a challenge. But oh, what fun it is. My gosh. I can hardly walk anymore, but I can still think, and I'm having a ball doing it.
And he's hoping you will too. Again, Jerry Apps along with us, author of On Farms and Rural Communities in Agriculture, Ethic for the Future. We'll be posting links up on our website if you want to check it out, MidwestFarmReport.com. And don't forget, follow JerryApps.com, and he will keep you entertained, not only with what his current works are, but my goodness, he's got a laundry list of projects that he's going to be tackling and presenting to us for the next pretty much close to a decade, and I support that. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.